We are going to look at what children are, and maybe from the most basic, from the very beginning, that children are needy. Oh, that may be a poor choice of words. Okay, let's go with a nicer way. Children are dependent. They need adults. They need people to help them in so many areas. But when you're the one who is having to give to that child, it doesn't feel like they are dependent upon you as much as they are needy of you, especially as they get older. And we're going to look at three things this morning that children show us in their dependence that we should have in our dependence upon our Father, our God. And it starts with something that is very simple to gather, but it's the first kind of time that you see it throughout history. And I want you to open up to Exodus chapter 12. Is that when we think about what our children need from us, or they are dependent upon us for? Oddly enough, the first thing I want to point out this morning is they are dependent upon us for knowledge. The children of Israel, while they were still slaves in Egypt, were told to put blood on the doorposts of this one-year-old lamb that they had kept around for 14 days that they slaughtered, to take that blood and to put it on the doorpost, and to have certain kind of food, and to get all of the leaven out of their house, and to cook food. And for 7 days, you don't eat any leaven, and you got to make sure that everything is cleaned out, and you're all ready for this. And this was something that they were going to do year after year after year, generation after generation after generation. And Moses says in verse 26, "And when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It's the Lord's Passover. For he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but he spared our houses.' And the people bowed their heads and they worshiped." What do you mean? What is this? We have that all the time. If you've ever taken your kids to some kind of museum or whatever, they're like, "World War II? What is that? Vietnam? What is that?" Or very simple things. They're walking around the house and they're like, "Mommy, what is that? Daddy, what is that? Why do you do it that way? Why are you out here mowing the grass? Why are you out here shoveling snow? Why are you out here doing this? Why? They have a curious by nature need to learn. And they need somebody to tell them what they need to know. They see something. "Well, that's a good question. I don't know why it is that way." Kids do that naturally because they want to know. And they're dependent upon us to help them. They can't quite figure out how to use ChatGPT or Google or anything just yet, but I'm sure by the time they get to second grade, my kids will learn about ChatGPT. It's going to be there. It's part of it. But nevertheless, they need us. And that statement is made over and over again. It's used in the next chapter in Exodus 13 of about the consecration of the firstborn. And they would see their father or their mother give the firstborn of an animal to the Lord. And it kept happening over and over. And he said, "Why do you keep doing this?" Well, because the Lord redeemed the firstborn out of Egypt. It is an opportunity to tell them about God. And I think probably the most obvious one for us is when the cup gets passed around, all kids want to get involved in that life, don't they? They want to take some of that grape juice. They want to eat the bread. Is it because mom or dad is doing that? Probably so. But then they start to ask questions. What is this thing? What is this service that you do? Well, they're dependent upon us to tell them. They rely on us. They are needy of us to tell them what that is. And in all of that, that is exactly what happens in Deuteronomy chapter 6, where teach your children from the time that they rise, from the time that they go to sleep, when you're walking along the ways, be telling them these things. Teach your children diligently because they need that info. They did the same thing when they crossed over the Jordan, and they were told to set up stones, memorial, 12 stones from the river. They put on the side of the Jordan so that when your son walks by or when your children acts by and they say, "What is this?" Oh, it's when the Lord our God brought us over into this great land when we crossed this river. There are many things that our children ask us about that are not, quote, church or religion related, that give us opportunity to say, this is what God has done. They need us to tell them, to give them knowledge of what God has done for them and for us. Does that make sense? They're right off the bat. They're not needy in that way. They might be annoying. What is this? What is this? What is this? That's the way they learn. That's the way they grow. Secondly, the very first one that all of us as parents realize is that they are dependent upon us and they are needy for their food. That starts from infancy. If you put a bottle or you put a mother's breast right in front of a child, it's not going to be able to do it kind of on its own. It has to be shown how to do that very thing. The child has to be put onto the mother, and many go from that way, and it's like, oh. Then once they are shown that, then instincts kick in. But they don't know right off the bat. They have to be shown these things. And they let us know, don't they, when they are hungry. The old saying is, don't wake a sleeping baby. But yet the doctor will tell you, wake them up and feed them every 3 hours, every 2 hours. Rachel's philosophy was, guess what? The baby will let us know when they are hungry. They will cry and they will say, I need food, right? Because they need us to feed them. They don't need us to wake them up to feed them. If they're hungry, they'll let us know. And the New Testament uses that picture in 1 Peter chapter 2, and I want you to flip there for a second, of the infant itself crying out for food. But the illustration is not for being hungry to be fed from food, but in the sense of verse 2, like newborn infants long for the pure spiritual milk, that by it you may grow up into salvation, if indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. It's like once you've tasted, once you've had the milk, you've had that it's like, oh, this tastes good. Not only does this taste good, this will help me grow. I need more. Give me more, right? Give me milk. Come on. Let's go. I'm hungry. It's all right. It's kind. It's like, and it seems over the top, doesn't it? Well, those babies, as soon as they're hungry, they're like, give me food. When was the last time you're like, give me the Bible? Give me the Bible. Give me the Bible. Holy message. You're like, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about newborn babies. And you annoy the stew out of mom and dad till you get what it is that you are craving, what you are in need of. But as you grow from this milk that you've been fed, you become more like this little toddler who knows what they want, but they are unable to do it on their own. If I put a bottle or a cup in front of my toddlers, guess what? They can drink that. They've now grown to that point. But when they say, what do you want for dinner? I want pasta. They can't quite fill the pot with water. They sure can't turn the stove on, nor should they. They still need me or mom to do that. Now, you want cucumbers? Guess what? Open up the fridge and get them yourself. You can do that. You can do that on your own, but they need you to do it. So they sit there. But guess what? They want to help. Oh, we got to scramble eggs. They want to be a part of that. But they still need us to hold the bowl, make sure nothing gets spilt. But they have this desire to not only eat it, but be a part of that preparation. And that is what you see in Luke chapter 11. He says, how many of you, and he uses this about how God gives good things. He says, how many of you, if you have a son, ask for fish, he'll give him a serpent. Or if you ask for fish, he'll give him a scorpion. There have been times where, like, I might think about a scorpion of there. But no, they ask for pasta. You have pasta, guess what you give? Pasta. They ask for cereal, what do you give? You give cereal. Why? Because that's what they're asking. That's what they want. And you recognize, hey, that's what they need. How much more so for God when we ask what it is that we need from Him, He gives exactly that. And tying that into what we just saw earlier from knowledge, if any of you lacks wisdom, the application of knowledge, what are you supposed to do? Let him ask God, who gives generously, James 1 tells us. So it's okay to even cry out to God for that knowledge because I know what I want, I know what I need, I just don't know how to get it. But I know who to get it from. Or you get just a little bit older and you get to Noah's age. And you can open up that fridge and you can see everything that's in there. And this happened maybe like 4 or 5 nights ago. Rachel and I were sitting on the couch. The children had actually gone to sleep. And Noah comes running down the steps. He opens up the fridge. Hey, Mom, I need some gabagool. He needs some food. He makes ramen on his own when we are asleep already. He makes his own pasta. He makes his own bagel bites. He makes his own grilled cheese. But guess what? If Mom is available, guess who he asks to do it? Mom. He's not needy. He just doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to feed himself, but he can. Now guess what? When he's in dire straits, guess what he's going to do? He's going to feed himself. But how many times do we see that kind of in general of, if I have to do it, I'll do it. But if somebody else can do it, I'd rather them do it for me, right? Well, that's exactly the picture in Deuteronomy chapter 8, is that, yeah, there was sometimes a lack of food, or it wasn't exactly what they wanted, the children of Israel. But God would still feed them. God would give them. And one of the things that he gave them was that daily food of manna, right? They got tired of how that tasted. They didn't want that all the time. And God wasn't always happy about that. But I want you to notice what he says in verse 3 of Deuteronomy chapter 8. The Lord your God led you, verse 2. Let's pick up action, verse 2. You shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep his commandment or not. So it's all been a big test. And he humbled you, verse 3. And he let you hunger. And he fed you with manna, which you didn't know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Even when God was feeding them physically 6 out of 7 days, but was giving them enough for the 7th day, it wasn't about food. It was about them learning what he said was the food that they needed. And isn't that exactly what Jesus says? My food is to do the will of him who sent me. Are we crying out to God for the food that he gives? Or are we more focused on the food that is for this belly? The things that he knows about, Matthew chapter 6, he provides those things. But the emphasis is Do you realize that you don't need all that? What you really need are my words. And we are dependent upon God for those words that do, in fact, give us life. Jesus realized that as he's being tempted in the wilderness by Satan. As he is going through when he is starving because he hasn't eaten for 40 days and 40 nights. And Satan says to him, see those stones right there? Why don't you go ahead and turn those things into bread? I don't know about you, but when I'm really hungry, I'll eat almost anything. And if I could make my own food and do it instantaneous faster than a microwave without the potential of cancer of a microwave, guess what? I would do it instantaneous. That is instant food right there. And Jesus says, no, Jesus. Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. He's having to tell himself that because he's being tempted not to focus on the words of God, but his physical desire. And so we are dependent for food. And thirdly, we are dependent on comfort from our parents, from our mother, from our father. There is, when children, maybe they are back to that crying out because they are starving. And you give them the milk and they go right to sleep in your arms. And it's great. It's like, yes, we did it. And then there are other times they're crying and you don't know why they're crying. And they won't stop crying and you're holding them and you're bouncing them and you're doing everything and nothing. You put them in their bouncy chair, you're putting them in their swing, or you're getting in your rocker like this mother. And then finally we're like Corey from a few weeks ago, couldn't get Josiah to sleep. And then finally the child gets to sleep. And it's like, and now you're afraid to move. Now you're afraid to breathe because what if I wake this child up? We're going to go right back into this cycle again. And I don't know that I can do this again. But you're holding them and you're looking at them and they're just so, as Rachel says, they're just so calm and so precious when they're asleep. It's like, yep. They feel that comfort. And that is the picture in Psalm, in Isaiah chapter 66, is that God is that peace. God is that comfort for his children that they can lean on him. And this is the last chapter in the book of Isaiah. And as Isaiah chapter 66 down in, let's start in verse 10. Rejoice with Jerusalem and be glad for her, all you who love her. Rejoice with her joy and all you who mourn over her. What are they rejoicing over? Because she's just had children. She has just born children. In verse 11, that you may nurse and be satisfied from her consoling breast, that you may drink deeply with delight from her glorious abundance. For thus says the Lord, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the nations like an overflowing stream. And you shall nurse, and you shall be carried upon her hip and bounced upon her knees. As one whom his mother comforts, so I will comfort you, and you will be comforted in Jerusalem. Just like that child who needs to be comforted by a mother and she's trying everything, bouncing them up and down and patting them on the back and doing everything, and that child is then comforted. So I will comfort you. Because we recognize that God is able to comfort us. God is able to do that for us. Or maybe we've run into the situation of where I'm Corey and I'm holding Josiah. And Josiah won't go to sleep for hours or screaming. And you're holding him and you give them over to mommy. So Elaine saw me working on this yesterday. She's like, oh, he's sad. I said, why do you think he's sad? Why do you think he's crying? She said, he's hungry. I said, oh, it could be that he's hungry. I said, what else do you think it might be? Well, maybe he needs his mommy. I said, yeah, he needs his mommy. I said, why do you think he needs his mommy? Because mommies are the best. And daddies are the best too. She caught herself because she is an equal opportunity lender. But you just need that. And so how many times have we seen our children, they need one of us. Maybe it's somebody else is holding our child and they're like, ah! And you put out your arms and your child comes to you and all of a sudden they are at peace, they are at comfort, they are all good. That is the way God is supposed to be for us. And that is what the psalmist says in Psalm 131 of David, is this psalm of ascent on the way up to Jerusalem to worship the Lord in these yearly times. He says in verse 1, O Lord, my heart is not lifted up and my eyes are not raised too high, and I do not occupy myself with things that are too great and too marvelous for me. He says, the things that I'm thinking about, they are the things I'm supposed to be thinking about. I'm not going above. I'm not going beyond. I'm not worried about things that I shouldn't be worried about. These things are within my purview and within my realm. But, verse 2, I have calmed and I have quieted my soul like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. He uses that illustration of that child that now knows how to console himself, where he doesn't need mom. But what he needs, as he says here, hope in the Lord. That is what is getting him through these things that are causing him anxiety, nerve. It is not his mother, but he remembers how his mother used to do that for him. But he has learned to go to the Lord to receive that comfort. And isn't that what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 11, where he says to them, come to me, all you are weary and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon me. Come, learn from me. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Come on, open arms, come to me. I will give you the rest, the comfort, the relaxation, all of the things that you need. I got it. And what does that child do that loves him? This is just for you, Ed. They come running, right? Because they know that's what they're getting. How many times have we seen it where, come on, come on. And the child is like, I don't know. And you say, what are you waiting on, kid? Why not go? Why not? And that is what God is saying to us. Why are we waiting? Why don't we go right to him and run into those open arms when we need comfort? Our children understand that. They do that naturally with us. But unfortunately, our natural bond with our father, our spiritual father, gets impeded, gets obstructed by all the physical things that get in our way. And we're not thinking about what our spiritual father can do for us. And so our children, we know they are dependent for knowledge. They are dependent for food, and they depend on us for comfort. I need to depend on God for my knowledge. I need to depend on God for my food. And I need to depend on God for my comfort. Those are some of the things that I'm learning as a father. Maybe this morning you've learned throughout your time of study that you need to be baptized. You need to have your sins washed away, and that the one who is able to save you is Jesus. And there is no other name under heaven by which man must be saved. And you know that and you believe that, and he's saying, come to me. You say, I'm coming. Lord, I'm coming home, right? You're ready for that today. Or maybe you just need the prayers of the congregation. Whatever the case would be, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?
Jesus and be always pure and good. Would you walk with him within the narrow room? Would you have